free today.
Take two is gone. Welcome to our new podcast at Channel 2, Take 3, because this literally is Take 3 for the podcast.
This is the third attempt.
I'm having engineering issues, like getting the modulation right, getting us to actually record, all the basics to get us here so you can listen to us.
The NASA-like board and the work to produce this show is
amazing.
It's humbling.
I know.
Think of it.
Yeah. It really is. And I wish you could all be here with us and there were cameras because we are rocking old school today.
That's it.
Greg is wearing a Reagan Bush shirt from 84.
That's right.
84 is a great year. And
it's
then
an awesome year.
Mara comes in here with her, what is it, Air Obama shirt?
Yeah, my Air Obama. It's
which is a classic
Air Jordan.
She
but
wore that to
Barack.
Trigger me. You know that's what she's trying to do, trying to trigger me with
trying,
that ridiculous
Greg, listen
shirt.
Listen to your voice. You're
it's just, Yeah.
Stress. And the funny thing is before you took your sweatshirt off, we didn't even know you had that on. We were taking pictures with just Air Obama. You
know,
didn't even
and you
let
know
us
why,
know.
Heidi? Because she wore that to try to trigger me. This is just a wardrobe choice. This is just a everyday. I looked at my closet
red,
and I thought, I will wear this red, beautiful Reagan Bush 84 shirt because it's just...
I'll tell you my favorite
nice.
Political shirt. I sleep in it every night, and I must have been doing it for a year now because it's 1 year since the vice presidential debate we had here in Utah,
right.
The University of Utah. And you know when you usually get a free t-shirt? It's like itchy and garbage, mm-hmm. And you just don't want it. It's luxurious, the
it's
shirts
a nice
they
one?
Have. Yes, I love it.
You know, there are some brands out there
who
nowadays where they
the
are
university?
Nicer.
I think the university quality. Must have done it. And I had an intern with me. And you know how you have interns because they're excited because it's the first political event
right.
They've been to. So they were running around
and
looking
for
free stuff.
And that was actually a big deal to be a nationally televised press.
Yeah, and she brought me back a t-shirt. President. And mind you, it's large enough if I belted it, I could wear it as a dress with heels. But it's like awesome. So
that's
anyhow,
the infamous fly debate where the fly landed on...
We remember.
Vice President Pence, which was a complete
classic.
Planned attack on our poor vice president
the
from the left.
The crazy part is that debate, I don't know what's happened in the last year, but it feels like 3 years ago to me. I can't believe it's only been a year.
It is crazy, isn't it? It has gone. It feels like a long, long time ago.
So I feel bad that I don't have a t-shirt on, but I do have a leopard print on, which is a little crazy for me. Normally I wear just the primary colors, so here we are.
Very animalistic on a Friday there, you know, and leather. Is that pleather? I mean, did you kill an animal for that whole ensemble or what?
I have a leather skirt, but this is
it
pleather.
Oh, it's okay.
But as a vegan,
so
I do
she's
wear
happy.
Leather shoes still.
I was just going to say, Mara is just so proud of you. I'm like, pleather.
Here.
That's, you know.
I know.
Greg, I like the real deal.
You do?
Rawhide.
Greg
real,
acts like
real
he's
leather.
Not into fashion, but last night you noticed that I was looking a little wild and you were into it or
and
not
I had,
into
but
it.
I had to check with social justice warrior over here to my literal left to find out if I could even mention such things, because if you do, it could be seen as a very...
This is the speech that white men give about being aware to other people.
Well, here's the funny thing.
I like
I don't
it.
Notice a lot, so thanks. I just thought I'd
my
mention.
My husband really hates it. He's not a fan when I curl my hair. And mind you, when I curl my hair, because it's so short, it looks like I was electrocuted and someone just didn't like fully go through with it. But you got to mix
I
it
thought
up
it was
sometimes.
Good. I thought I saw the broadcast and I thought, that's good, because it's different than the way you wear it at other times. And I, even as I'm saying this, I'm thinking, I'm listening to myself going, I'm just getting in trouble here somehow. I can't.
You get lots of feedback. Right?
I do get a lot of feedback.
That's
and
interesting.
The funny thing is I'm super controversial right now because I tweet the numbers for people getting sick with coronavirus and those who are breakthrough cases. So sometimes I like to have crazy hair just to give other people.
Why does that
I'm
bother
about.
People?
I don't know. People just don't like it. But older women, not a big fan of the curly, crazy hair.
Oh, so you've
younger
spotted demographics
women enjoy
in these
it. Yes, there
observations?
Are demographics. And men all send me messages like this. I'll read one off of Instagram.
Uh-oh.
It's not terrible, but it's always this. Love the hair tonight. You look a little wild and, dare I say, naughty. I'm loving it.
Oh,
and men,
that's inappropriate
men
right
for
there.
For some reason, like when my hair looks crazy, they're like, ooh, it looks naughty. And I'm like, this is not naughty. It's just like what is this?
Yeah.
So then it makes me never
my
want to curl
my
hair.
My wife is convinced that... my gender is doomed. Anytime there's a terrible crime.
That's not just your wife, Greg.
On the news, she just makes sure I know that these aren't women committing these crimes. You know there's a common denominator here.
I generally would like to say that all men are not bad. I like men.
I would like to
think
that. I
like my husband.
I would like to think
that
the gender is not doomed and that we are actually contributors to this whole human experience.
Absolutely. Like, I don't
want to
take the garbage out on Sundays.
No? Sure. There are roles for you.
Yeah. You know what? I can't even argue with that. I get the sense very strong that's my role. I have roles.
We all have roles we play.
We all have
roles. We've all played out our roles in this, but it's sort of final again till it's not final. Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante are back to their full size. I wouldn't say, I guess, original size. It keeps being like a hamburger at Burger King where it's a full size, it's a medium, it's a small fry. Anyhow, our congressional delegation, as we know, has made it fairly clear that they wanted this to not be in the president's hands, but something to be done in Congress where there was something permanent so there wouldn't be a yo-yo. Greg, I know you're not loving this.
No.
Is it what you expected? Deborah Holland came here, I want to say her name Holland because that's how it's spelled. She came here, I think she really listened to people, whether Biden listened to her or what her takeaway was. They did go through the steps of coming here, listening to tribal leaders, listening to county commissioners. So should we respect the decision Biden made?
I think it's tragic. And I'll tell you that I took pictures throughout the experience when President Obama was leaving office. And in December of 2016, he designated these monuments or monument, Bear's Ears Monument. And we had a press conference. I flew down with legislative leaders and we met the main street in San Juan County. It was full. People were upset that this designation had occurred. Later, we had Secretary of the Interior Zinke come to do kind of what you just described that the Biden administration's secretary did. And there were helicopter tours, and there was a real earnest desire to dialogue with the community. And I was part of that. I joined him in those tours. I saw the public come forward. And then ultimately, the President of the United States came to Utah in December of 17 and signed a reduction. So if we looked at it with just political eyes and said this is just going to be one side of the political spectrum versus the other, our request, I, as a Speaker of the House, ran a resolution with the Senate President Niederhauser asking the Trump administration to rescind and remove the designation entirely. And that is not what happened. They kept it, but they
Trump didn't
they
pulled listen it. To you?
They didn't. He should have, I guess. But I tell you, I think it was a very thoughtful process. And what you saw was a shrinking of, and they gave good reasons why they left the monument in place, but they made it considerably smaller, and I would argue appropriately. But that's not what happened here. They just went and rubber stamped the status quo of what happened in December of 18. And I don't think it went through that kind of more judicious process. And if you look at the original designation, they actually argued that starry skies and the quiet of night was what they were trying to protect as well. There were just some stretches in terms of what they were justifying as a national monument. And it just makes my hair stand up in the back of my neck when I hear there's going to be so much tourism because of this. Well, that's not really what Teddy Roosevelt was talking about when he wanted to preserve some of our nature's greatest treasures. It actually does the opposite. You have more trampling over. We heard this even in our tour that volunteer search and rescue, since that designation had happened by Obama, there was damage. There was more traffic. There were more calls for search and rescue as people were being lost. And it was not preserving or protecting that land as advertised. And you don't get that if all you're talking about is tourism. So say you want to do something that creates more tourism, but saying you're doing it and creating a national monument in the same breath saying we're going to protect all of this, it's not true. And I will tell you this, finally, and I know you've been very patient,
and
Mara.
Therefore,
you will never see another president of any party go into a small, very small rural county like San Juan County and change this. There is no upside politically nationally for doing it. There is a downside nationally with the environmental interests that do not want to see this happen. So it is a net easily a negative for any president to do it. It's why George W. Bush didn't do it. And I felt that the concerns that San Juan County residents, both Native Americans, people that live there, it was a diverse crowd. They felt like you'd see someone at the Simpson Avenue, Salt Lake City hearing whether there should be a homeless resource center in their neighborhood. They were as concerned about where they grew up and what was going to be impacted around their community as you would see people in a hearing for land use decisions in Salt Lake City. And the tone and the frustration was the same. The difference is people in Salt Lake City can go to a public hearing in Salt Lake. The people of San Juan County will never have audience with a president to make that case again, and it'll never be adjusted again. It's not a ping pong. It doesn't sway back and forth. It'll never be touched again because there isn't a president that'll spend capital on that.
I don't know. The interesting thing, though, is this has turned, Mara, into this Democrat and Republican debate, but when I look at it, there's so many different facets and pieces to this, because we're talking about, when you look at San Juan County, you know, do they have the money and, you know, the ability to take care of this? We look at businesses. Do they need to be ready for tourists? Do they not need to be ready for tourists and spending? And we're talking about tribes, and there's just so much that goes into this. Is this a win, or is it like, okay, we've just got one more decision that could be changed again?
I mean, I would define win as, in 50 years, will we look back on this and appreciate that it was done? From my point of view, yes. I do think the Biden administration did due diligence on it. And I think we've seen, you know, you could have made the argument maybe that the Clinton administration didn't, but I think the Biden administration did do the due diligence.
What's the difference? I honestly don't know the difference between Clinton and Biden.
They did pretty much the same thing that Trump did. They had advisors come in, they took in data. For me, too, one really important piece that I think that the Biden administration did pay a lot of attention and deserves a lot of attention is the tribal voice. And the five tribes are on board with the Biden plan. The locals are split. And it's a really tough issue when you live proximate to these attractions, wherever they are. And you have a couple, you have a county down there, and you have a couple of towns who were for the expansion. And then you have several towns that were against the expansion, and locals all over the place. But I do think it's interesting. I'll just overuse the word local, because I do think it's really important that when we talk about locals, the tribal voice in this really matters from my point of view. And I do think that that was taken into consideration. The other thing that's interesting as part of the expansion is Trump's jurisdiction expanded it partially. So his partial, he split it into two parts. And so that reunited, and then he had not major acres actually, but small acres were reconstituted and back in there. But from my point of view, if the test of good public policy and the test of special places, and Utah is blessed and burdened by having a number of special places in the world. And if you've ever been to the places and camped and spent time there, which I have spent quite a bit of time in that area, for better or worse, for those who also call it local home, these are extraordinarily special places. And I think that it'll stand the test of time. In 50 years, we will be appreciative that to some degree it was protected, and protections do mean restrictions. And I think that in this instance, it will serve
America
well.
And I'll be really brief, because I'm not trying to get the last word on this. I just want to make two distinctions. One is that when we talk about tribal support or opposition, it was the more global, and the tribal support from a broader jurisdiction, the local tribes that live actually in that location, that area, were opposed to it, which I think is important to note the difference.
But that's not quite true.
No, I was there. I mean,
you were there.
We heard the testimony, Mara.
You were there for the Trump round, and I don't want to. Greg, I didn't discredit that.
No.
But to be clear, that is not accurate.
I will just tell you what I was hearing in the event when I was participating in this, and this is what. I mean, some of the press conferences were speaking. They were speaking in a language that wasn't English, and this was meant for other people. The other issue is, the listeners need to know that this land was and would always be Bureau of Land Management land. This was always federal land. So I don't want to think that it was public or private property that was going to be developed and paved over at some point. Bureau of Land Management federal land does have a degree of protection. And I think that of those that were opposed, we're not going to say it was, I'm not going to claim the whole town, I guess. The idea that it required additional protection because they weren't good stewards of the land that they lived on and approximate to, they took offense to. And I think that is something that should be asserted.
They took offense, but when you assert,
it wasn't being damaged, it's actually being damaged when more people are trudging over it. And that's what happens when it becomes
when
more
known.
When
you assert monuments, they're not value statements. And when you move into value statements of offense, you move from policy to politic. And so I appreciate that they had offense, and I appreciate that those who had free grazed in that area, but it was federal land. This is within the purview of the president. And I do think that in the long run, we talked about last time sort of how Congress is doing business. We are at a precipice where we're pushing the red button a lot on both sides, right?
It's exhausting.
It is exhausting. And so it's a hard place, because on one hand, I support this measure. On the other hand, boy, I wish we would all move back away from it.
Alaska has exempted itself out of this this federal this monument practice. I think Wyoming has done as well.
We're hoping.
And so we don't even have a level playing field on this. as states. And I think that when Teddy Roosevelt did this, there wasn't an environmental protection agency. And I would like to see Congress be leaders and really start deciding these things on a more judicious way and a fair way. How do you get states that get to exempt themselves out of any consideration for this? It's just not right. I mean, you ought to be able to look at these things and even ask the question that what Teddy Roosevelt did, do you even need that practice anymore, given the other safeguards that we've put in place since his presidency in the early 1900s? I mean, can we find a better way to do it? Making it a political football certainly won't. I will say, though, that I don't think there's a Republican president that will ever reverse a national monument. I don't think it'll ever happen. So,
and I say good for the Republican president who won't, and good for the Democratic president who stops
I know,
this
process. That, of course that's...
No, I mean, like, we do need to stop the process. But I think we won't regret Bears Ears.
Yeah, we'll wait and see. The interesting thing is, you know, how many people go there. I would like to say that I'm a poor planner, and the October fall break for kids is coming up. And I thought, I'm just going to go look and see if I could go down by Bears Ears or Grand Staircase or Canyonlands or Moab. And I was willing to camp, stay in an Airbnb, anything.
I will say
there's nothing to be fair.
Check, Bluff is the best city in the state. Bluff, if you haven't ever stayed in Bluff, Utah, stay in Bluff, Utah.
I'm telling you right now, I learned so much on these tours, and I actually came away from
the
tour with Secretary Zinke with a deeper appreciation of wanting to preserve some of these treasures. I thought it was
don't
it
make
like
me take the
else.
Cheap shot in which this is the first time Greg has seen these precious properties and was like,
you know what, Mara? There's
this.
No one that gets to see them at the height and vantage point that the tour that the secretary was able to take.
No,
it was
not,
a unique way
not
to
true.
See
there
the whole
thing. There
are
people who have been engaged with these properties for years and years.
You can't
beyond
you can't.
The supersonic helicopter and actually on the ground.
It is beautiful down there.
Horizon amazing. Doesn't do it justice. It's a very different view.
It's
I'm telling
beautiful
you.
There.
It was
my
it
mother
was
and father-in-law lived down there for years, not because they had grandkids or anyone around. They just loved the beautiful outdoors there.
And the horse on the hill.
Yes. Yeah, so there's all kinds of beautiful things. There are not so beautiful other things going on this week. I want to talk a little bit more congressionally for a minute. Senator Lee this week, and also now Chris Stewart, joining in the call for the feds to walk away from school board meetings. Chris Stewart tweeting, an angry parent is not a domestic terrorist. And Lee is saying, stay away from our school board meetings. He signed a letter and basically telling the DOJ or the Department of Justice not to interfere with local school board meetings or threaten the use of federal law enforcement to deter a parent's free speech. This is all coming at, about because of CRT. And Mara, you start here. Do we need the feds in our meetings? Do we need to be threatened with that? And then do we need to counter-threaten? I don't know.
So
I'm just like, come
so
on, guys.
So we don't, but let's just light this up for a minute, Mr. Hughes.
Let's light it up.
I am ready to launch on this one.
What a bit of malarkey. This was political theater at its best. And I'll just say.
Are we talking about the DOJ?
The DOJ, the letter, the pleading to, you know, not have federal officials. Let's roll it back and actually look at what happened. Because I get a round of applause for political theater once again this week from Mike Lee. But it is
it's
so
not,
shallow.
I don't know how
Merrick
you can
Garland,
say that.
All this was the school association, which isn't employed by the federal government, reached out and said, we're highly concerned about some of the threats we're seeing. Merrick Garland said, go check it out and see if we should do anything. That's all that happened.
That's
and
all, then, you think that's
and
all?
Then
you
all
think that's
of the senators run to their reelection committees and scream that we shouldn't have jackbooted FBI thugs beating on these precious parents. Now, given that, no one thinks that the federal government should go in and pound these parents. All that was asked on behalf of people who represent superintendents, I do think there's a level of vitriol. I do think there's concern by teachers and superintendents and school
Welcome
administrators.
Welcome to public service.
And teachers and superintendents who had no expectation of this, and they just asked if some of the FBI would review this and see if there were protections. This wasn't about any individual parent. The FBI is not tracking them. This is much ado about nothing, and it's political theater.
Okay,
so
just let me go now.
Tell us about the political theater.
The exercise I love to go through is just flip the issue and see if you would just be as like, huh, who cares? If you took an issue,
I didn't say who cares.
If you took an issue that liberals were passionate about or that they cared about, and you had an absolutely ridiculous premise.
Schools.
No, I'm saying if you took something that you that would actually make you worry.
Let's say parental rights, freedom of speech is what I care about.
If the Attorney General of the United States of America were to take such a ludicrous comment, like, can you designate angry parents that go to school board meetings as domestic terrorists and exercise the Patriot Act? If they said, I will look into it, you would lose your mind. You would never let a Trump administration attorney general ever say that and not hold them accountable. But what I will say is this. It was also when they found out that a lot of what is being complained about is a company that Zuckerberg has helped funded that his children, his wife's husband, runs. There's a conflict there. And only when that conflict was actually put out there did everybody start retreating from it. When they asked Jen Psaki, this is where you know that what Mara's saying is she'd like you to believe, but this is the honest truth. When Jen Psaki was asked about this idea of angry parents going to school board meetings, being treated as domestic terrorists, and even staring at the Patriot Act, she did not douse that idea and say it's absolutely ridiculous. She didn't say what you just said. What she said is, we're not the attorney general. That's down the street. You'd have to ask him about that. We're not a school board, and we're not the DOJ. So you'd have to ask, as if they don't actually talk, or they don't know who Merrick Garland is. They don't know. She completely avoided answering a direct question on that.
Were in the Supreme Court right now?
Oh my gosh! Yes. No, I would not prefer that. I'm so grateful that
he's wasted.
Do not have.
Yes.
Him on there.
Yeah. Not when we've got a beer drinking, party you know what? Loving.
When I hear this freedom issue, because there's been an article, they showed the companies that his child's husband runs that does this data mining of the kids, asking them if they're comfortable with their sexuality and everything else. They listed in one of the articles the large school districts in America that they have contracts with. And Jordan School District is one of them.
Sorry, this is Merrick Garland's?
This is his daughter's husband's company that he runs.
Oh, I thought he ran a company that taught how to teach CRT.
Yeah, that's it. But they data mine to get that information. No. It's you're exactly right. But this is a scary part. They data mine information, and this is the part that gets into the deep grass. That why I wanted to continue this discussion. When I was a state lawmaker, and we looked at legislation that would look at trying to improve how we deliver education to kids, two things would happen. If there was a vendor. If anyone said, look, we have a way to help teachers get continuing education, it's an online thing, you don't have to go to the actual brick and mortar school. You can argue that you like that idea as a vendor, as a third party that you would contract with or not, and you can have that debate, but that's what a vendor is. Or English is a second language. Can you have a software that children can learn English because the teacher might not, it might not be a language they understand or can communicate in? Is that a vendor that a school district would want to hire, or would the state want to help with funds to have that vendor? We've had an ongoing debate in the state legislature about the role of vendors in the delivery of education. What infuriates me in the story about this particular company is that they are getting information about children that we've been told, and school districts have said FERPA and federal law doesn't allow us to give you any information about these kids. They have defined this company uniquely as a school district, what they call it, an agency or a school district. They are not defined as a vendor when they absolutely are. And so for them to call them an official of the school district to be able to then get that information about these students, when we have had these ongoing discussions in policy about the role of vendors in the delivery of education, that's what I really feel is under the radar and is deceptive and is wrong. You cannot have a company like this getting access and doing things that principally we've been told, and we've operated under this set of rules, that you can't get that student information and you're not supposed to be able to do that. So that's a little that part of the story you can read over very quickly and not really understand what would be significant there. But I know what's significant about that, and it's not right. It removes them from that vendor discussion and about accessing students' information, which is really sacrosanct, or was. You weren't supposed to be able to do that, or you were very careful on where that information went. They have circumvented that, and I find that to be one of the worst parts of this whole story that's broke recently about this issue.
Well, this whole story started with Senator Mike Lee, and I'd like to return to him right now because he's up for re-election.
He's a champion, and he's calling this out. Thank goodness.
Yeah, he is up for re-election in a year. He has Ali Isom running against him. He has Becky Edwards. Now he has Evan McMullen. You may remember him from running for president in 2016, garnered about 20% of the vote here in Utah for people who wanted a moral option that was not President Trump. He is back at him again. And I hate to even admit that I didn't know this. Mara had to notify me that there's a new Democrat in the race this week that I'm going to have to call and talk to, Nick Mitchell. So a lot going on here. Greg, are you excited to see Evan McMullen back in the race and giving people an independent option?
Yeah, it's offensive. He's a spoiler. He is funded by the elite that want to spoil races. He left that presidential race. While he got 20% in Utah, he had about less than 4% nationally. But he left that campaign with an existing debt. I looked it up this week in the FEC. It's a publicly accessed Federal Elections Committee database. It's $669,000 and change that he sits with debt to that presidential campaign. So now he's actively trying to raise money for a Senate race. Where does this guy come off being a fiscal conservative or anything if he's sitting on $670,000 in debt from a presidential race, and now he's going to restore integrity and responsibility and fiscal responsibility to a Senate race? Mike Lee.
He should have done a Ponzi scheme with this house like Mike Lee, and that would have been better.
My biggest question about Evan McMullen is, does he know he's a marionette doll, or does he honestly see himself as a straight-faced candidate?
Who do you think is pulling the strings?
People that don't want Mike Lee to win. They want to dilute votes. They want to try and take votes away from Mike Lee from different narratives and different candidates.
Like, you think, and I'm tired of that. He has a chance of that.
No, I don't think it. I think it's offensive, and I don't think it'll work. But it's amazing. Yeah,
in America, for someone who wants to run for office and applies,
I don't find the concept of running.
Do you find open elections offensive, Greg?
I don't find open elections offensive, Mara. I find this individual and then the fact that he thinks he should and could run to be offensive. By the way, he said that when he was a little kid, he wanted to be a CIA agent. That'd be like your little kid coming up and saying, I'd love to be a sniper. Who wants to be a spy? Who wants to live? I mean, what kid wants? You want to be a police officer? Like, you want to be a cowboy? What little kid wants to be a spy?
Okay,
that is weird.
Okay,
that's just
AM
weird.
Radio. I don't know if that's my turn. Weird.
It's weird.
It's my turn, AM. So I'll just say there's two
FM
parts
radio.
Of this that are so interesting. And one is that, I mean, Evan McMullen is legit, right? He got 20% of the election. He is a viable candidate.
Oh, please.
If you give that he's run a presidential. I also think it's interesting that Ali Isom, Becky Edwards, and Evan McMullen would be considered right of center, traditional mainstream conservatives, and they are all, and in some ways they seem to be staking out the same territory, which just shows you where Mike Lee is on this. Now, so I think that, I think he's not. I think he's a little ideological, and I think he's a lightweight, and I think as we had in our last discussion, he's all about the politic. But it does show you the pushback that Mike Lee is getting. The polling also shows you how thin his support is. I have seen very few elected officials in which you can turn their likability numbers into dislike. So he's not heavily liked, according to the polling.
I feel like both of our senators are kind of at this point right
well,
now.
Well, Romney's stronger than he
is. Oh, he is. Okay.
Yeah, and so he's got a thin likability with the Republican electorate. But here's what's interesting about this.
Okay.
The more people who get in, Evan McMullen, in my opinion, just guaranteed Mike Lee the race,
which is a bummer.
Because
I was going to ask you a follow-up question to this.
Not a good senator for the state of Utah.
You're sharing.
But I will say the problem is that he is going to, if you had one strong challenger, you may beat Mike Lee in the Republican segment. The second you have two or three choices, he's not that vulnerable. So if everybody peels away 6%, 4%, 2%, and 8%, you've guaranteed Mike Lee that he'll
let me just
be
say this
senator
to listeners.
Again.
If you don't know Mara Carabello, I will tell you that she is one of the more knowledgeable people in the campaign and elections space. She knows.
Are you saying that
she
because
is a
she's
veteran.
Saying that Lee is going to
no,
win?
No. Because I'm going to ask a question, and I know that
it's
she knows
setup.
The answer, and we will see if she will answer it, because I know she knows the answer. Given the historical results that come from elections in midterm elections.
Sure.
So when you have a Republican or Democrat that
right.
wins the presidency and
the
you have a midterm.
The minority wins.
What is the historical outcome? And would you call Mike Lee in line with where that historical voter sentiment lands, or would he be on the outside of that?
The minority party wins because we're like flipping off the majority. So in this case, you'd give half a dozen percentage points to the Republicans already. You might think the
conservative's a strong candidate in a midterm, huh?
No, you wouldn't. You would think that the majority party.
You don't believe what you're saying.
Republicans should have an edge this time.
Yes,
though, because they're in the minority.
Conservative
party.
Republicans. You're getting a heavy dose of liberalism right now.
But I do think Mike. So we would never swap out. I think an independent run is foolhardy. I think it's a fool's errand. So while I think McMullen is a legit candidate, I think there is the viability of virtually nothing. I don't think an independent can win. I'll say that unaffiliated
kills the definition of a straight-faced real candidate, what you just said.
But I mean,
he has no chance.
But he's a legit candidate, but he doesn't have a runway here.
Okay.
And then I do think a single strong competitor could have beaten Mike Lee, but we don't have that. Now we're going to have a three-way split. And
this is your crowd's fault. How come they couldn't land on one candidate? This is your, she elitist crowd. How come they couldn't land on one candidate?
We like to call ourselves moderates. But it is an interesting question.
It is.
I mean, and part of it is there's so many people who think Mike Lee is doing such a bad job that I guess they just
missed the memo that if they just dilute each other's vote, it's
Greg, you ran for governor. Yeah. I mean, she always goes here.
I feel like this is her way to kind of stick it to me.
Jenny Wilson didn't run for a federal office because I think she thought she'd win that. I think she ran to get the credibility with party and then have another position as county mayor. That's just how I take it.
It was strategy.
It was strategy.
Yeah.
So maybe there's some strategy in here for some of the candidates. I don't know. I'm excited to get to know Nick Mitchell. Democrats need
he's
new
given
candidates.
Us a choice.
They need new blood.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to
meet the extent that the Democrats have to quit trying to influence Republican nominations and build their own party, I actually do concur that the Democrats should get good candidates and they should put their weight behind candidates from their party that believe what they believe.
That's how
you get a two-party system, and there's nothing wrong with that. I can't stand it when everyone tries to blend into one party. That's terrible.
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 Terrible. Do you know what else is not good? We have had crime stats come out. I wasn't planning to talk about this, but I did have some follow-up numbers. Last week, we were talking about response times in Salt Lake City, and Mara brought to light that they have a lot more officers than we realized ever out there. And so they do have a lot of officers. We called, and now these are the numbers that their Department of Communications gave us. They said they have currently funding for 571 sworn officers. They have 512 sworn officers on the force right now. They didn't give the specifics of how many are in training, but I think there's 30 or 40 is what we surmised. And then they say they're currently down 59. But that's still a lot of officers, more than we've had before.
Biggest force they've ever had.
Yeah, but apparently...
That is a different way to say it than I've heard. You're Mara, and I trust because your background in this space, I trust that what you're saying is true.
And interestingly enough, I know a lot of our police departments are down right now just because some have left the force with everything that's been going on in the last year or so. There's been a lot of different issues that go into this. There's been defund the police ideas. And at the same time, we're looking at federal crime numbers that are coming out from the FBI and our DPS numbers that show rapes actually are going down. But in our state, homicides are going up. And that doesn't shock me. And this year, it even seems more. I feel like every single day on the news in the last 2 weeks, we've had a shooting where somebody's been killed, at least one. And I'm like, what is happening here in Utah?
I'm going to tell you that I don't think because you don't see the arrests and the data that shows the arrests that these crimes are not occurring. I think that what happens is, and it might be the case that Salt Lake City has a stronger force than they've had in the past, but it is without doubt that law enforcement, good men and women in law enforcement who do not feel support from the jurisdiction that's hired them. So when you hear narratives of defund the police, that does not instill confidence in an already dangerous job for someone to continue in that profession. And at the same time, if we're going to paint law enforcement as the problem, and we're not going to talk about the criminals, or we're going to shift the focus on law enforcement as if they are the bad guys, what young person wants to enter into a career that is already inherently dangerous where they would be or potentially be described as the bad guy or gal? And so we're not seeing at our academies and those that are choosing law enforcement as a profession, those numbers are drastically down. We're seeing people that are leaving. And we're also hearing that disturbance calls which were answered before suicide threats, and like we saw in the high profile case of University of Utah football player Aaron Lowe, six calls, disturbance calls went unanswered, and only when gunshots were fired was a response did a response happen. That is just not this spontaneous, you know, strange event that we can't draw lines to or connect the dots. We have had a real narrative that has been anti-law enforcement. And when you're anti-law enforcement, I'm going to tell you, it undermines your public safety. I think we are living through the consequences of that. And you can't see in this week's report, the crime stats that came out that the Department of Public Safety, Utah's Department of Public Safety released, a 44% increase year over year in homicides, and think that we're in any kind of sane situation here, because we're not. And I want to say we got to understand the consequences to being soft on crime and demonizing the police, and know that this is what we're going to get. And you can't hide a homicide stat, but you cannot charge other violent crimes.
Some things, though, and I think we're fortunate in Utah in that there's been no major discussions of defund the police. We should say that, including Salt Lake City.
No, Mara, they said we're going to do zero-based.
Who's the pronoun?
Okay, Salt Lake City said, we are going to go into an exercise uniquely for the police department into zero-based budgeting. Let me tell you what that means.
And that means
we're going to reduce. But you know what? It doesn't create certainty when you say we're going down to ground zero. You have no dollars. Yeah, and now we're going to build your budget $1 at a time. Yeah,
And there was supposed to be a delay. I forget
there
how
was.
That
but I am telling you that when you say that, mean it, but it absolutely does undermine the morale of your law enforcement when you say we're going down to zero.
I'm not disagreeing with your position. I'm just, there are perhaps some nuances. I'll take a minute.
Okay.
So, I mean, we are fortunate that by and large we're not seeing, compared to some other cities and other states, we're not seeing, and you didn't see Salt Lake City's mayor or council enact a retribution. They gave lip service to the Black Lives Matter movement big time. But here's some things I think that are really important when police statistics comes out. In small states like Utah, it's really important to look at the raw aggregate and not percentages, because let's just take a random small city and let's say that, you know, Parowan had a horrible incident. I mean, it could result in a 250% increase. And in fact, it was a single incident, not meaning to minimize it, but raw numbers in small states are important.
If it's a quiet place, Nelson, they have a murder, first in 10 years.
6 to 12 is double, but 12 is still maybe, depending on what you're talking about, it's important to look at the raw number and not just the percentage in small states. It's also really important to look at the year-end, year-over average, and the five-year and the 10-year average, because you find that often crime, and this is me agreeing with you, Greg, just giving some other things I look at, they even out sometimes over a five-year average. I know you do this, but I would just say for listeners who are more interested, for me at least, I think it's really important to not look at percentages in Utah. I think it's important. The other bait and switch that often happens is crime goes up and you hear chiefs say, yeah, and we went out and arrested X. And often what you find is violent crime went up and they arrested for misdemeanors. And that, I think, is a common bait and switch in which they say,
I don't like that.
I don't either. And I think it doesn't solve it. It's where you would call soft on crime. I would not take that 80s rhetoric away. But
and like overall,
you,
I think
it's
there
not
are
hard on
arrests.
Crime. I can tell you that. Yeah. Look, again, I don't think that what happened to this play, I think this was a high profile murder, what happened to this young man, this football player. But I think we can learn lessons from this. I think there's a lot going on in that situation that we can see as a pattern in this state. And one of them was this, the suspect in custody right now is named Book. He had an aggravated robbery with a weapon that was pled down to a misdemeanor. Come on. That young man, that guy should not have been out.
He tricked a judge on two different occasions.
Are you telling me that aggravated robbery with a weapon is a misdemeanor in our state? It is not. And it should have never been charged as that. And so that is not a one-off, wrong place, wrong time moment. That is a trend. And that is something that's happening in this state that this high profile case brings our attention to. But all I would say is that is not a one-off situation. That's happening at a disturbing rate, and we've got to reverse that.
And Greg, where you and I agree are, it's not the rank and file men and women. They are serving us well.
I do agree with that.
It is absolutely a leadership problem.
I couldn't agree more. I think that is at the heart of it, and it's sad. And it Anyway, so that's...
If we're going to agree, can you guys switch T-shirts and you wear the Obama shirt and you wear the Bush and Reagan shirt?
Yes. Just because she gets rational every once in a while, you know? I just, you know, kudos to Mara.
That's why we do this. We can come together and share T-shirts and outfit swap and all that good stuff. That's not going to happen, is it?
No.
I was wishing. You're like, no, definitely not.
You don't want to swap.
Oh, gosh. Well, it has been fun talking these tough issues in the great state of Utah. And after all, there's always something we can agree on, and that's why we get together and talk
Happy
about
Friday.
It here on this week's Take 3. Thanks for being with us.
Take 3.